This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Stephen Alan Brittis is going to join us. Councillor Stephen Alan Brittis, I should say. So, leader of the council, London Borough of Merton. And Stephen was formerly head of public affairs at the FSB, been in Merton for many years. So I think you've got an interesting perspective from a kind of business perspective, but also local government. And I think you're going to say a few words about freedom to use assets to attract investment from the private sector, and whether that's a viable solution.
Thank you. Yes, a lot has been said already. What I wanted to do is give a view of Merton, the London Borough of Merton, and outer London Borough. Huge contrast. We've got the All England Lawn Tennis Club on the one hand, with the most expensive road in the country, Parkside, and then down to Mitcham, Pollards Hill, one of the most deprived wards in the country. In fact, one of my residents did a test. They dropped a boulder in Cannizzaro Park and within 10 minutes dropped another boulder in a park in Mitcham. The resident phoned the council, complained about both boulders. The boulder in Cannizzaro Park was picked up within 10 minutes. The boulder in Mitcham was still there 3 weeks later. So that is the kind of area we have and the kind of response and the kind of tensions we have within the borough, and we have to accommodate all sides there. So it's 210,000 residents. We have to find £70 million over 4 years. We found £24 million in the budget, balanced budget passed 2 weeks ago. 3,000 staff, we've had to make 6% of those staff redundant, that's 222 people. Average redundancy of £14,000, costing the council £3 million. But we've done that well in discussions with staff. And in terms of the cuts, we've allocated some of our values as a Labour council, 27% cut in the chief executive's department, 3% cut in the children's department. So I think that is very important, and that needs to be said. But certainly it is crucial that local authorities look at all their assets. For Merton, the big prize there was the way in which we transferred our housing stock to Merton Priory Homes. And that garnered all-party support. The council stock was costing us £9 million a year into the national pot that we were paying. In order to achieve decent home standard, that would have cost us £130 million over 10 years. We successfully transferred the stock to Merton Priory Homes, reduced our debt by £24 million. On home improvements, there's a VAT clawback. Normally, the VAT clawback is shared between the Housing Association and the council. Our contract meant that we kept it all. And so over the next 15 years, we shall benefit to the tune of £30 million. That's commercialism, that's hard-nosed contractual negotiations undertaken by excellent staff led by Jed Curran, the chief executive. And Merton Priory Homes so far have paid over £4 million to us. And under no circumstances could we have achieved the decent home standards without transferring the housing stock to Merton Priory Homes. However, it is difficult for a borough like Merton, given the current state of the marketplace, to move towards things such as local asset-backed vehicles. We've looked at that long and hard, and it's not for us at this moment in time. I was going to be a bit more positive until the budget yesterday with tax incremental financing. I think that is something that can be looked at. But with the proposal that commercial land can be switched into residential land without planning permission, I think that would make it more difficult for us to attract uniform business rate payers into the borough if that is what happens eventually. And also our income from planning applications will reduce as well if that is the kind of theme that is going to go on in terms of planning, that you will not need to bother, and that residential can turn into housing straight away. One of the things that Merton is well known for is holding that balance between land for employment and land for housing. We don't want any borough to be a dormitory. All boroughs must have a balance of people living and working and playing in the borough. With this proposal announced by George Osborne yesterday, boroughs will come under immense pressure and won't even be able to oppose it if commercial can be turned straight away into residential. So there are other ways that we're trying to maximise value. Active letting of vacant units. We're implementing rent reviews and lease renewals regularly, trying to get as much there as possible. We're acquiring ground leases to enhance future quality and rental income. And we're liaising with tenants to minimise voids and identifying short-term income generation initiatives prior to the sale. Only this morning, I was on a tour of our assets very close to Cannizzaro Park. We hold the freehold to that, and there are some sites there that are potential for renting in particular. Now, one of the ways to maximise your value, your disposal programme, is through the planning process. And again, I've told you about the hit that will take, and that is sad. But we're also supporting relocation opportunities to vacate surplus space, and Gifford House is where we have staff there for housing benefit issues. That staff are moving into the Civic Centre near Morden Tube Station. As a council, we're doing all our best to use council assets for advertising. That's roundabouts, street furniture, buildings and hoardings. Also, the council will always put up its name to run national schemes. For example, Merton runs the well-renowned, well-respected CHAS, which is the Contractors Health and Safety Assessment Scheme, and that licence is given to us by the ALG and brings in modest amounts of money. But even before Pickles, we've been sharing ad nauseam. We share our registry office with the London Borough of Sutton, which is Liberal Democrat, and we share our HR services with Sutton. So the Human Resource Director is from Sutton and is a shared service that is saving us £400,000 a year, and will do so over the next 4 years. And even before Pickles, we're sharing our legal service with Richmond, with Conservative Richmond. So when their legal director stepped out, in we stepped, and our legal director is now the legal director of a shared service between Richmond and the London Borough of Merton. And again, £400,000 saving per borough from 13-14 onwards. The income streams and the value of sharing is not in year one or even year two. There are a lot of upfront costs before there is any benefit. We're also jointly procuring HR system and payroll service, Merton, Sutton and Kingston, and that will be done through a company in Rochdale. And again, that will save £200,000 per annum per year on payroll services to each of those boroughs. And we have a South London Waste partnership with Croydon, Conservative Croydon, Kingston, Merton and Sutton to steal waste for our 870,000 residents among those boroughs. Other opportunities we're looking at when we're going through the procurement process will be putting as one of those selection criteria the support for the young apprenticeships. How many apprenticeships will the private company undertake, and how many work experience kids will they take on? If we are considering any outsourcing, for example, waste collection, we may ask the winning company to pay for the capital investment of wheel beans if we want to introduce them. So again, that is the way we're working with the commercial sector. We're also thinking of setting up an environmental service company. And again, that is very, very important. At this moment in time, London Borough Merton is the first borough to allocate solar panels on school roofs. Three of those went up about a month ago at a cost to us of £66,000, but there will be huge savings, not just to the council, but there also will be an educational curve for the children because there are monitoring screens within the school corridors showing the saving as a result of those solar panels, and it is very, very educative. I do believe that there is a scope for localisation of business rates, but it is important there is an equalisation debate that takes place as well, so that councils that are not so blessed with business ratepayers do not lose out. But that is one way forward. We are very keen on social enterprises as a borough, so where there is a close need of staff, if they want to put their hand up and set up the unit as a social enterprise, we're very happy to look at that, certainly. So it is. We do want to look at all aspects. I'm fully aware, as someone with a commercial background, having worked at the Federation of Small Businesses, fully aware of assets and the use of assets, very, very important. What is important, though, is for the government as well to back off demonising public sector, public service. I think that's very, very, very important. It's not without irony that the Department for Communities and Local Government is now called the Department for Criticising Local Government. I think it is important that we are proud of our local authorities, proud of the staff that work, and that the demonisation of the public sector stop, because the values and the asset values will be constantly reduced in the eyes of the commercial sector if all they hear is that local authorities are not well-run or well-resourced. But it is my intention in Merton to not to create a property hub, but to create a place where people want to live, work and play. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I mean, I think just a range of kind of very specific things that you're doing, and I'm talking through some of the challenges as well. And I think that point about the boulder just highlights the tensions that any local authority has to deal with just within its own boundaries, let alone when you're starting to think about some of these kind of challenges about how do you manage the internal issues, how do you deal with the politics. So that was fantastic. We don't have that much time, but I would like to just see if anyone has any questions for the panel. Would you just raise your hand if you do? In the meantime, I always have questions. I think one of the things that really struck me about the debates we've been having are just how much is already going on, but also the need for speed. And this was something that came up earlier, the need for these things to happen very quickly. But as John was saying, there are a lot of kind of philosophical issues and political issues that also need to be worked through, and some of those take time. When thinking about that, so dealing with these front-loaded cuts and then thinking about all of the bigger, quite long-term structural changes, I mean, is there a piece of advice that you would give if you were talking to another local authority or just reflecting on what you've done in your local authority? Is there a piece of advice you would give to the attendees today about this is something I would do if I was you, or I would think about? Catherine?
My advice, for what it's worth, is don't leap to the solution you first thought of. You've really got to work it through. It's that you don't start from there and work back.
So you need to be quick, but not too quick.
Absolutely, you need to be clear. That's what you need to be, and that will make you quick, because you could end up doing the wrong thing and wasting a load of time and money.
Yeah, John.
I mean, building on that, I would agree entirely, but it's also being very clear about what it is you want to achieve before you decide what it is you're going to do to achieve it. And I think all too often we leap to process before we leap to outcomes.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the criticisms levelled at local government, that there's a comfort in process rather than a focus on outcomes. And clearly there's an awful lot of discussion about what the outcomes are, but yeah, I think that's key. Stephen?
Well, I think it's talking things through. As a council, we'll be a third smaller come 2015, both in staff numbers in particular, and that's sad. There'll be a lot of good staff that we'll lose. But yes, it's predicting, it's talking through issues, it's having roadshows, staff roadshows, using every possible opportunity to speak with residents and with the business community as well. So again, this attack on communication tools that local authorities use, I think is unwise. We have a quarterly magazine that goes out to all residents, all 80,000 households, called My Merton. It's not a Pravda, it's not a rag, it's an opportunity for us to have a debate with residents and indeed with the business community. I think co-opting individuals as well onto committees is very important. We try and do that regularly, and the business community, we have excellent relations with the Merton Chamber of Commerce, and I think we're very proud of that relationship, and also with the local branch of the Federation of Small Businesses. So as a council, especially one with which is no overall control, it's important to use the expertise of the officials, the staff, to have a balance between member-led and officer-led as a local authority, but to do as much talking as possible, but also to sweat the assets, to make sure there is no vacant properties, make sure every possible income is generated, look at make sure you have staff who are very positive and don't bring up objections but bring up solutions, and so you can do that by enthusing people about the place in which they live and work and in which they play. So, and the other thing is to retain the dignity of the borough and its name and in the view of the residents, so that they don't think it's all coming to a shuddering halt. It's not coming to a shuddering halt in any local authority. These are tough times, and local authorities can get through them, and people do deal more with their local authority than they do with central government.
So, very clear messages. Look before you leap. Know where you're going. Talk to people about it and really engage with it. And I think a kind of theme through the morning has been talking about the role of local government, what it's for, what it's doing, and then rethinking how it needs to do that. And, as John said, this isn't static. So what local government does now doesn't mean it will be doing it in 5 years or 10 years. In fact, it very much looks like it will change. But that sense of thinking about internal changes in the context of this external world, changing economy, the need to think about jobs, the need to think about how you can work differently. And so you're thinking about culture change in that external context, but also in that external context, thinking about how you can engage with the businesses, the staff, getting those changes to happen. So, again, lots of information, some really useful examples. I certainly really enjoyed it and thought it was very valuable. Before we stop for lunch, which is downstairs...
I have a question.
Oh, is there a question? Oh, that's fantastic. A question's brilliant. Sorry. Please do. Sorry.
Sorry, I thought you were kicking it off with some questions. Thank you very much. That was a lot of food for thought. I am...
Did you say who you are? Sorry.
I'm Manjeet Gill. I'm Chief Executive at West Lindsay Council. And we're clearly looking at a lot of things in an entrepreneurial way as well. And I'm particularly at the moment, the discussion we've had about the private sector, the third sector, or the public sector or the state is I actually wonder whether there's more of a blurring between all the different sectors. There's a brilliant Harvard Business Review article this January, February on the death of capitalism and how equally private enterprise is, moving much more towards co-production and community and so on.
Okay.
And I wonder if, this is more not about small states and private sector and so on, but more about good leadership and innovation, wherever it is.
Great, thank you. And sorry, but are there any other questions? No? I mean, I think that's a really kind of interesting question. Is there a blurring of the boundaries? Catherine?
I think there is a lot in what Manjeet is saying, but fundamentally we mustn't forget that we are democratically led organisations, and that's the difference about local government, and that we are here, our members govern their local communities and take decisions in the people's name, and that's not trendy really in this kind of language, but it's fundamental to who we are. And we must never let that be forgotten. And I think there is a real potential democratic deficit on all of these new models of delivery. Yeah. And people will still want to talk to their local councillor about stuff. They will want to ask, I can't get my child into a school. How do I do it? It's a free school. How do I do it?
Yeah.
The councillors are the people on the patch, and we mustn't ever lose sight of that.
Absolutely. John?
I understand what Manjeet is saying, and she and I have had some of these conversations in the past. I'm not sure it is a I'm not sure we do want a blurring. I think we want to actually understand quite distinctively the role of the public sector, private and third sector. But that doesn't mean we can't cooperate and collaborate and partner. But if we're blurred, it seems to me there's a risk actually that collaboration and partnership won't work, because we get confused about who's doing what and what accountabilities are. Because ultimately the private sector, its ultimate responsibility is to its shareholder. The local authority's ultimate responsibility is to the community. Mm. And therefore, there will be different behaviours that flow from that. Mm. And that's not to say you shouldn't collaborate and work. And I think in terms of, I think we were all saying, in terms of services, I think we'll see services move between sectors, and for some areas there will be, a, you know, we'll move to a retailer to provide a to customer relationship where previously we've had citizen to local government, but that's not. I think that's slightly different to blurring. I think it's sort of evolving, and it's quite. So lots of things moving around in different directions. But I think if we blur, there's a risk we actually lose, as Catherine said, the real core of what local government's about.
Stephen?
I do agree. I do think there is a blurring. It's not intentional. For example, huge conglomerates have huge corporate social responsibility duties that they may use. Then on the other hand, you've got charities that are virtually commercial organisations like Oxfam or British Heart Foundation with huge bases in the high streets, in Bond Street. And then you have Kent County Council with its commercial arm. And a lot of my members, Federation of Small Business members, you quite rightly hinted, we're not happy with the way in which a local authority is buying and selling or providing a motor MOT bays, for example. You've got hospital ambulance bays being used for commercial MOTs, which compete with MOT garages. And social enterprises, again, coming in. So there is this blurring, and it's important that we make it a beneficial blurring and just agree that that is the holistic way forward.
So I think, in a sense, changing roles, but it needs to be clear that actually local authorities are elected, you know, and that's one of the big differences of the clients versus customers sense. So I think that's all everyone who had questions, and so we will break for lunch in just a minute, which is downstairs. I'd just like to highlight that there's some seminars after lunch. Seminar A, which is the founder of S2M Limited, Simon Wayne, is going to be speaking about the benefits of recovering overpayments in order to generate extra funding to be invested in revenue-generating projects. Seminar B, we've got a roundtable debate on new mutual and social enterprise models in the context of revenue generation for local government. So it should be really useful seminars. Please do sign up. I hope you enjoy the lunch, which is downstairs. You'll have a new chair for this afternoon, Michael Burton, who's editor of the MJ. So I'd like to thank you all for your involvement, and I'd just like to ask you to thank the speakers, please. Yeah.